Hello everyone, I'm going to be covering multiple topics in one episode, and I'm going to just totally freestyle this off the top of my head. So, I'll clear this up. Yes, for the most part, I used birth control with my past sex partners. Most of the time with the women, most of the time with the men, most of the time the non-binary adults. I say most of the time because when you're traumatized and you don't know how to get the help you need, you don't know how to seek help for what you need, because trauma is that diabolically awful. I didn't always have birth control. When I was having sex with women, the majority of my sex partners, men, a little sprinkle of my sex partners, non-binary, the lowest sprinkle of my sex partners. Lowest sprinkle means lowest, you know, the shortest amount of sex partners in terms of numeration. So I used to pull out method when it came to all three types of adults. With the women, the men, and the non-binary adults. For me, none of my women sex partners had diseases and infections. None of my men sex partners had diseases and infections. And none of the non-binary adults had diseases and infections either. They all got tested. They were declared negative. The men, the women, and the non-binary adults. And I can honestly say that I never was a fan of sexual comparisons. Never have been, never will be. I'm not even a fan of bodily comparisons. Never have been, never will be. And I'm not a, and lastly, I'm not even a fan of the body count. Never have been and never will be, because to me, it's all forms of human degradation and human decimation and human devastation too. So I never did any of those things. I don't think my partners ever did any of those things. There were women who I was acquaintances with and associates with, they did all those things in terms of, they did all the body counting in quotations, and they did all the body comparisons and sexual comparisons. How do they do these things? Well, they were usually nearby when I would meet my sex partners in terms of non-binary men, but mostly women. So they were able to do their own quote-unquote estimations, even though I never liked any of the estimations. They'll go, oh, that person, you know, in terms of sex, they're probably on a scale of 1 to 10 or past 10, and they do all these scalings, and I hated it. So now that I've cleared that part up, I want to talk about, okay, Antonio, you said that some of your partners were parents. So what was that like to deal with the children and them simultaneously? Well, there were times where I would play video games with their children. There were times where I played board games with their children. There were times where I played jigsaw puzzles and Word. word puzzles and Connect Four and Scrabble and Uno with the children. There are times where I played hand games, children's hand games with the children. There are times where I read children's stories to children. Sometimes I remember reading the kids' bedtime stories. And, you know, sometimes I remember with the children, I would act goofy, playful, and silly with the children, and they appreciated me. I never tried to take their father's place, even though the kids wanted me to. They would tell me, please be my daddy, please be my father. And so I remember telling the mothers, the ones I was involved with, so to speak, and they loved the idea, even though I was like, but in my mind, that's not something I purposely pursued. I may have unintentionally pursued it, but I had no intentions of, I'm gonna come in and remove your dad's. That I never felt that. In my mind, it's just we're together, you and me, and I embrace your kids, I embrace you, but I wasn't trying to be the stepdad. I wasn't even trying to be the main dad. I was trying to be the only dad. In my mind, I'm with my companion, and the kids just are there to tag along in terms of us being a package deal. But at no time did I ever try to usurp their fathers in any kind of way. And in terms of the sex and romance between myself and their mothers, it was never, hey, these are my vehicles to be the only man in the house and your dad is out. No. So the mothers were like, well, that's why they told me that's why I pursued you. I don't want I don't want their fake me out dads to be the dad of the house, nor the man of the house. I trust you with these duties. You know, they're like, well, I appreciate the sex and the romance, but I need more. And the more is, I need a man to run this home. I need a man to make sure the kids are self-disciplined. So that's why they can't, you know, pursue me. Sometimes I went on field trips with the kids, the mothers, myself, the kids. And some of their extended relatives that the mothers were cool with and on good terms with came along. You know, like aquariums, zoos, family-friendly activities. And on the trips, we only use family-friendly language, family-friendly presentations, because, you know, it could be the music, listening in the car, it could be the conversations we would have with amongst ourselves and other people, you know, aquariums, you know, you interact with people. Zoos, same thing. So everything was totally family friendly, and we never veered from the family-friendly culture we all created for each other when we were out and about, and just being in the same home with one another. So, I'm not braggadocious about these things. It's just helping me to better understand my purpose for my living. It helps me to better understand that these issues are very common in our world. And so I'm able to help other people heal from these type of things, because reflection is often my biggest way of healing. To hear myself think, to hear myself quietly think and loudly think, I get therapeutic insightfulness on the spot each and every time it happens. So I don't share, I'm not trauma dumping, I'm not sexual trauma dumping, I'm not spiritually bleeding, I'm not sexually bleeding on anybody, but these stories are also the best way for me to heal. A mixture of stories and reflections helps me to overcome and conquer all the sources and causations of all these kinds of wounds, so to speak, what have you. So for me, how did the extended relatives feel about me? They all liked me. They were all like, well, they were all asking me, oh, so you're the new man. Well, welcome to our family. And even when I was sleeping with the mothers, they didn't have a problem with that. I thought they would, because I thought, you know, if you're old-fashioned, you know how they feel about sex, dating, romance, even marriage. They didn't have a problem with it. They're like, well, we like him. He's a solid person, and, you know, we've been praying and hoping that you would find a good man. And they're like, hey, if I had a man like that, we would be constantly having sex too. And they said, they all approved of it. They're like, as long as you keep treating her right, we don't have to tell you that. We already know you're doing it. That's just our way of showing you that we're happy that you're doing all these things. Then y'all can do whatever sexually y'all want to do. That's how the families felt, because in their mind, they were so used to her, you know, and this is several women and several families like this, constantly with the male misogyny. They're like, if you get a good one, they even told her, like, they told all the families of these women, told these women, once you get a good man, you must wear him out. When it comes to sex, wear him out. Make him sweat, make him tap out, make him tired. You need to give him your all in the bedroom. That's what families told her. So when they told them, so that's when the women got with me, the family said, remember what we said, you got your good one. So gotta handle your womanly responsibilities. Meet his manly needs and make sure, you know. And they're like, we all know he's going to meet your womanly needs. And so everything they said, they took their advice when it came to sex between me and them. We, not to brag, but yes, did we wear each other out? Yes. Did we make each other tired? Yes. Did we make each other sweat? Yes. Did we make each other tap out? Yes. We made each other sweat. We did. All those things happened. And yes, in our minds at the time, we met each other's needs. In my mind, I'm meeting their womanly needs, and their minds always, you know, in their mind, well, I'm meeting his manly needs. So that's what happened. And we didn't hold back when it came to sex. So we took the advice of their relatives, their family members. They didn't have a problem with us even with the affairs, they weren't like, what the, oh my God. They were more like, I just want those guys gone. I want those male pigs gone. So they're like, I understand you can't wait because you found you a good man and you still have to get your needs met and you have to understand that you can't control when a good man comes into your life. So the family said, you have our blessing to, you know, rock Antonio's world, and he already has our permission to rock your world. They said, he's helping you heal. And they said, well, I understand that you're now in the process of getting divorced, and you're now in the process of not being with him anymore. And they were happy when the husbands were like, well, you know, you have our permission to be with Antonio sexually and romantically during the divorce proceedings. The whole families, and the families were happy about it. Their friends were totally on the same page with their families. Even their colleagues that were the coolest were totally on the same page with their families. So were their associates and acquaintances. They were all like, yes, girl, go. They were all like, yes, girl, go get your needs met. Yes, go be happy. So did they all approve of the affairs they did, which surprised me because I thought they would read me the riot act abrasively and gently read her the riot act because, okay, they knew her much longer than they're knowing me. And they were all cool because they were like, we're tired of male misogynists. You dating them, they dating you, and you marrying them. We tired of that. And some of them were married more than once. Some of them have dated much more than once. And they said, now that you have a good man, you have to do what you got to do. He's not going to stop cheating. He's not going to stop barely coming home. Usually he don't come home at all. So I remember the women in the family talked to me, and I'm scared, and as soon as I saw them, I started apologizing on the spot. I remember I was literally on my knees begging for their forgiveness, like, I'm sorry, I tried to leave, she wanted me to stay. And as soon as they looked at me, they did this motion as if to say, rise up. Like, you know, they pointed at my feet and then raised their fingers up. So I knew right away, they were telling me that's their way of saying stand up. And so I stood up very quickly. And I remember they said, there's nothing for you to apologize about. Why are you apologizing? And in my mind, I'm going, well, ideally, it's not supposed to happen, you know, with the, no, it is ideal. It is supposed to happen. Yeah, y'all supposed to be together. Absolutely. And I'm trying to figure out, and so I said, explain what you're saying. Are you testing me? Because if so, I'm really trying to be a good man now. That's why I'm trying to get out of this. I respect y'all, respect her. I don't want any, at the time, I kept it real. I don't want any Jerry Springer associated with me. They laughed, and I'm trying to understand, like, and I told them, you know, when y'all laugh, it's hard for me to understand. Do you take this seriously? They're like, yeah. And that's why we're laughing. You, Jerry Springer material? Antonio, you got a sense of humor. That's one reason why y'all should be together. And they're like, Antonio, laugh. It's okay. We're not offended. Go ahead. And so I laughed. And I was like, well, explain to me why you're not offended. Tell me. So they were like, well, you know, hey, if I had me a good man, I could not wait to get divorced. I just can't do it. If I have me a good man, he does everything a good man's supposed to do. He has a pure heart as a good man's supposed to have. I would be sexing him like there's no tomorrow too. I can't put off my human needs just because of the legal system. So I remember in certain regards, me talking to them, I remember saying to them, well, you know, how do y'all fully feel about me? Since we're being honest, I need to know. They said, well, you're extremely handsome, extremely wise, you're extremely articulate, and extremely charismatic, and you just extremely a joy to be around, and we love how soft-spoken, your diction is really perfect, and, you know, you're just, and we love that physically, it's obvious you can take care of her. They said, well, sexually, yeah, you can, and I started blushing, like, oh my God, hey, it's the truth. And then they said, well, physically, blah, blah, you can very much protect her, so that makes us feel good. You know, I just remember, too, that it wasn't easy to continue the conversation at times because I'm struggling. Like, you know, I remember telling them, I wish I could protect her more. And I remember blurting that out, I wish I could protect her more. And they said, well, Antonio, you are protecting her more. Now that she's going to be leaving him, you're going to protect her more. So it was an unusual infidelity. Don't get me wrong, infidelity is usually considered unusual, and that makes perfect sense to me. But in the case I'm talking about, it was extremely unusual. You would think that so-and-so would beat me up or curse me out or yell at me or, you know, press charges against me criminally or, you know, civilly try to take me to court for damages done. And you would think I would be run out of town, these angry mobs, all the stuff you see in the movies. I thought all these things would happen to me. So that's why I was so scared, and I was begging and pleading for mercy on my knees, and I thought maybe, you know, I need to start pouring my heart out. It's better if I start talking, because if they have to start talking, I thought my life was over, but none of that ever happened. And that's how some families are. Never mind, if they're used to a loved one dealing with a lot of disenfranchisement, romantically, you know, romantic disenfranchisement, sexual, like sexually disenfranchisement, and all kinds of disenfranchisement, there's some families who will go, hey, I know it's considered cheating, but we don't care. And there are plenty of families who do that. I'm not glorifying this, but these are things that happen in the human condition, in human nature, human self-reflection, when it comes to a lot of people. I'm not bragging about any of these things, but these are things that are usually not talked about openly. These are things that are usually not mentioned quite often. I tend to shed light on what's not talked about enough, or what people do talk about, but it tends to be behind closed doors. I'm bringing these behind closed doors conversations out in the open. So I don't celebrate anything I'm saying to you. I'm just telling you the truth about this is what happens when many people are traumatized and many people get sick and tired of ill treatment. These are the kind of behaviors that many people are willing to engage in whenever these traumatic incidents occur. So, what was interesting was, and I'm not proud of this, some of the women relatives were like, well, asked the mothers, Can I have him too? And I remember they asked the mothers that in front of me, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, don't do that. Don't ask that. What are you doing? Don't think that. Stop thinking that. And the mother smiled, and I said to myself, I was like, oh, shit. She gonna say yes. Damn it. And the mother said, oh, hell yeah. And so some of her women relatives looked at me with lust in their eyes, licking their lips. And I was like, and so I remember saying, y'all gonna have to promise me that y'all not gonna kill each other or be vindictive towards each other because of what y'all just agreed to. And they said, oh, we can guarantee that promise will always be upheld. Because the mothers, I didn't know, but at the time, the mothers were encouraging women relatives, well, okay, because sometimes I could tell the women relatives were attracted to me. So, their women relatives and the mothers would start the conversation with the women relatives, because the mother said, you're attracted to him, aren't you? Oh my God. You know, the wet dreams I have at night because of him. And sometimes when I first met them, I noticed it, but I didn't want to talk about it. I would try to keep my distance, but they would always like follow me in their own way. So I ended up sleeping with the women relatives. Because in their families, if they considered an extremely good man, they couldn't just let their one relative have you. The other one relative's like, well, you know. But I always had sex with them all separately, because as a group that would have been incestuous, but I slept with them all separately. And it was odd because I asked them, do I ever talk about, yeah, we sometimes talk about what sex is like with you. I'm like, together? Yeah, and I just remember being grossed out, like, but y'all family, what are you doing? There's lines you just don't cross with your family. But they said, well, you know, hey, that's, you know, we're not prudes in this family. Some sex happens, we gonna chop the shit up. We gonna chop it the fuck up. And that's what they said. This is how bad trauma can be, because they also were sexually, physically violated too. And there were plenty of people in their families they didn't deal with because they did those things to the women. So all the families of the women, a lot of them were physically and sexually violated. And a lot of them made sure that their families were, the relatives who did these things to them were either prosecuted or had restraining orders or a mixture of both. Because at first when they were physically and sexually violated, it was covered up. So in all the relatives who covered up the physical sexual abuses and were the enablers and coddlers of all these physical sexual abuses, prosecutions end up doing penitentiary time. All the enablers did time. All the coddlers did time. All those who covered these abuses up did time. And all the direct perpetrators / predators did time too. So, but the women relatives, who were they? Aunts. The mothers of the mothers. So the kids' as grandmothers. The nieces. these were all adults, right? So the you got the adult nieces, the adult aunts, the adult grandmothers, the adult female cousins, the adult female sisters. That's what happened. And they were physically, sexually violated. Some of the mothers had adult female daughters, and they slept with me too because of trauma. And I slept with them all because of trauma. Because the daughters asked the mothers, "Mommy, I wanna. I wanna be with him." And the mother said, "Go ahead." And at first I was like, "But I'm a father figure to her. What the? This don't feel right." But the mothers was like, "Well, you know. But hey, I can't stop my daughter from liking you." So it was odd to be a father figure to somebody and they're like, "Okay, go be with this person." So that's what was weird. So yeah, and to be the family member, but I'm with the mothers, women relatives, and they all wanted it. Trauma can be that bad. I think bad is an understatement. I think, you know, growing up too, in regards to all these things that happened to me, this didn't happen in all the women's families. At least 2 to 4 of them. Most of the time, it was just me and the mothers. And they're the only ones in the family I was sleeping with. The mothers had kids. I mean, nothing happened between me and the kids. I was just strictly father figure. And I was basically considered the unofficial son-in-law, brother-in-law, nephew-in-law, niece, nephew-in-law, and that's what I was considered at the time. Grandson-in-law, pretty much. In most of the families, it was like that. So, those are the times in my life where all these things happened because we all wanted to heal. We went about healing incorrectly and wrongly. And I say that while being gentle on us. And I'm usually gentle, especially with people who there's no intentionality of malice, maliciousness, but unintentional malice happen when we misappropriate healing and misappropriate sexual healing, and all those things happen non-purposefully. We didn't know how to go about healthy love languages, healthy lust languages. So lust and love were our primary languages whenever we were going through and needing healing, unintentionally speaking. And I say all these things with woe and sorrow in my soul. All this makes me sad. To be honest, I did an episode talking about there were certain things about sexual past I liked, and you know what those are. But overall, I really do not like any part of my sexual past. And that sounds like a contradiction. Let me clear it up. What I mentioned was is that I was grateful that at least I used birth control, and me and my lovers never clowned each other sexually, romantically, anything that happened. But overall, I don't approve of any aspect of my sexual past because it was all, you know, trauma bonding and that's what hurt. I don't approve of any of the things said, did, thought, and felt in regard to my sexual past. I don't approve of any of the things said, done, thought, and felt during the organized crime part of my life, too. So there was a lot of enmeshment, sexual enmeshment, covert incest. There was a lot of emotional incest, sexual emotional incest too. It was and here's my analysis of what happened to me as a child and how it showed up in these particular sexually grotesque conduct. In my childhood, I was exposed to the Jocasta complex. In psychoanalytic theory, the Jocasta complex is the incestuous sexual desire of a mother towards her son. Raymond de Saussure introduced the term in 1920 by way of analogy to his logical converse in psychoanalysis, the Oedipus complex, and it may be used to cover different degrees of attachment, including domineering but asexual mother love, something perhaps particularly prevalent with an absent father. The Jocasta complex is named for Jocasta, a Greek queen who unwittingly married her son Oedipus. The Jocasta complex is similar to the Oedipus complex, in which a child has sexual desire towards their parents. The term is a bit of an extrapolation, since in the original story, Oedipus and Jocasta were unaware that they were mother and son when they married. The usage in modern context involves a son with full knowledge of who his mother is. Theodore Rake saw the Jocasta mother with an unfulfilled adult relationship of her own and an over-concern for her child instead as a prime source of neurosis. George Devereaux went further, arguing that the child's Oedipal complex was itself triggered by a pre-existing parental complex, Jocasta/Laius. Eric Byrne also explored the other parental side of the Oedipus complex, pointing to related family drama such as mothers sleeping with daughter's boyfriend when mother has no son to play Jocasta with. With her feminist articulation of Jocasta complex and Laius complex, Bracha L. Ettinger criticizes the classical psychoanalytic perception of Jocasta, the maternal, the feminine, and the Oedipal slash castration model in relation to the mother-child links. So I was exposed to that in my childhood, and it showed up in the sexual behavior at that time. So there was a sexual Jocasta complex. Then there was the Oedipus complex. In classical psychoanalytic theory, the Oedipus complex, also spelled Oedipus complex, refers to a son's sexual attitude towards his mother and concomitant hostility towards his father, first formed during the phallic stage of psychosexual development. A daughter's attitude of desire for her father and hostility toward her mother is referred to as the feminine Oedipus complex. The general concept was considered by Sigmund Freud in the Interpretation of Dreams, 1899. Although the term itself was introduced in his paper, A Special Type of Choice of Object Made by Men, in 1910. The theory is named for the mythological figure Oedipus, an ancient Theban king who discovers he has unknowingly murdered his father and married his mother, whose depiction in Sophocles' Oedipus Rex had a profound influence on Freud. Freud rejected the term Electra complex, introduced by Carl Jung in 1913, as a proposed equivalent complex among young girls. Oedipus refers to a 5th century BC Greek mythological character, Oedipus, who unknowingly kills his father Laius and marries his mother Jocasta. Played based on the myth Oedipus Rex was written by Sophocles, c. 429 BC. And so it says this: Freud's original examples of the Oedipus complex are applied only to boys or men. He never fully clarified his views on the nature of the complex in girls. He described the complex as a young boy's hatred or desire to eliminate his father and to have sex with his mother. Freud introduced the term Oedipus complex in 1910, article titled A Special Type of Choice of Object Made by Men. It appears in a section of this paper describing what happens after a boy first becomes aware of prostitution. When after this, he can no longer maintain the doubt which makes his parents an exception to the universal and odious norms of sexual activity, he tells himself with cynical logic that the difference between his mother and a whore is not, after all, so very great, since basically they do the same thing. The enlightening information he has received has, in fact, awakened the memory traces of the impressions and wishes of his early infancy, and these have led to a reactivation in him of certain mental impulses. He begins to desire his mother herself in the sense with which he has recently become acquainted, and to hate his father anew as a rival who stands in the way of this wish. He comes, as we say, under the dominance of the Oedipus complex. He does not forgive his mother for having granted the favor of sexual intercourse, not to himself but to his father, and he regards it as an act of unfaithfulness. Freud and others eventually extended this idea and embedded it in a larger body of theory. So all those things happened in my childhood. So I grew up witnessing the Jocasta complex, the sexual Jocasta complex, in the crime world, because all that happened in the crime world. In the crime world, I witnessed the Oedipus complex and the sexual Oedipus complex. Next. Oh, I witnessed this too, and it's very, very disturbing. In the crime world, I witnessed the Electra complex. In Neo-Freudian psychology, the Electra complex was by Swiss psychiatrist and psychoanalyst Carl Jung, July 26, 1875, June 6, 1961, his theory of psychoanalysis is a girl's psychosexual competition with her mother for possession of her father. In the course of her psychosexual development, the complex is the girl's phallic stage. A boy's analogous experience is the Oedipus complex. The electric complex occurs in the third phallic stage, ages 3 to 6, of five psychosexual development stages, the oral, the anal, the phallic, the latent, and the genital, in which the source of libido pleasure is in a different erogenous zone of the infant's body. The idea of the Electra complex is not widely used by mental health professionals today. There's little empirical evidence for it, as the theory's predictions do not match scientific observations of child's development and is not listed in the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of Mental Disorders. As a psychoanalytic term for daughter, mother, psychosexual conflict, the Electra complex derives from the Greek mythological character Electra, who plotted matricidal revenge with Orestes, her brother, against Clytemnestra, their mother, and Aegisthus, their stepfather, for the murder of Agamemnon, their father. Electra by Sophocles. Wow. So, some, you know, a lot of those characteristics I witnessed in the crime world, the Electra complex. I'm not saying everything Electra complex is spot on, because what I told you was science has not verified. But in terms of what I can tell you that I saw spot on, in the organized crime world, I did witness daughters having psychosexual competitions with their mothers for possession of their fathers. I saw that. I did hear stories of daughters eliminating their mothers so they could have sex with their fathers. So in the crime world, I heard stories of sons eliminating their fathers to have sex with their mothers. So I saw sons get rid of mothers to have sex with their fathers. And I saw daughters eliminate their mothers to have sex with their fathers. So those parts of the Electra complex and the Jocasta complex, those are true in the crime world I was particularly in. I did experience the Phaedra complex in the crime world. The Phaedra complex is an informal, non-scientific designation to the sexual desire of a stepmother for her stepson, though the term has been extended to cover difficult relationships between stepparents and stepchildren in general. The complex takes its name from Greek mythology. Phaedra was the daughter of Minos and Pasiphae, wife of Theseus, sister of sister of Ari and Ariadne, and the mother of Demophon of Athens and Acamas. Though married to Theseus, Phaedra fell in love with Hippolytus, Theseus' son born by either Hippolyta, queen of the Amazons, or Antiope, her sister. When Hippolytus refused Phaedra's advances, she falsely accused him of propositioning her. Phaedra eventually killed herself in remorse after subsequent death. So, in the crime world, the Phaedra complex was normal. I'll tell you the truth, it's all disgusting. So yes, in the crime world, I witnessed the Jocasta complex, the sexual Jocasta complex, the Electra complex, the sexual Electra complex, the Oedipus complex, the sexual Oedipus complex, and the Phaedra complex, the sexual Phaedra complex. I witnessed the Laius, so that's Laius complex. The Laius complex revolves around the paternal wish for filicide, particularly for the extension of the male heir in an attempt to ensure one will have no successors. Filicide is the deliberate act of a parent killing their own child. The word filicide is derived from the Latin words filius and filia, son and daughter, and the suffix side from the word seder, meaning to kill. The word can refer to both the crime and perpetrator of the crime. So, yes, I even witnessed this Laius complex in the crime world and the sexual Laius complex in the crime world, too. The next thing I witnessed in the crime world is parentification. Parentification, or parent-child role reversal, is the process of role reversal whereby a child or adolescent is obliged to act as a parent to their own parent or sibling. Two distinct types of parentification have been identified technically: instrumental parentification and emotional parentification. For instance, instrumental parentification involves a child completing physical tasks for the family, such as looking after a sick relative, paying bills, or providing assistance to younger siblings that would normally be provided by a parent. On the other hand, emotional parentification occurs when a child or adolescent must take on the role of a confidant or mediator for or between parents or family members. So I witnessed parentification. I witnessed the parent-child role reversal in the crime world. And in the crime world, I witnessed sexual parentification, and I witnessed the sexual parent-child role reversal too. Next, in the crime world, I witnessed what is called covert incest, also known as emotional incest, which is a type of abuse in which a parent looks to their child for the emotional support that would be normally provided by another adult. The effects of covert incest on children when they become adults are thought to mimic actual incest, although to a lesser degree. This term describes interactions between a parent and a child that are exclusive of sexual abuse. So, in the crime world, I witnessed covert incest, emotional incest. In the crime world, I witnessed sexual covert incest and sexual emotional incest, too. So, now you fully understand what I was saying to you about that life. I know I said that I was gonna freestyle totally, obviously I didn't, but 36 minutes of this episode, the first 36 minutes I did, but then the psychological terms kicked in my head, so that's how I am. I have the last sets of traumas to tell you in the next episode.